Broadcasting on all frequencies from the jungle of death, you're listening to Babes in the Woods.
Hello, and we are back in the jungle of death. This is Rachel with my good friends Lindsay and Nyssa.
Hey!
Hello, ladies. So today we're going to talk about something that you've probably seen quite a bit on our blog, Game of Thrones. We won't spend too much time lashing George R. R. Martin's lack of writing. However,
hey guys,
we are going to talk mostly about the television show because it comes back March 30th. 30th or 31st? I guess it's the 30th.
I think it's the 31st. Cause it's
31st. Yes, Easter Sunday. That's right. Woo! Nothing says Easter like some killing.
Like the battle of Scottsdale.
I think that it's a spoiler, you guys, that Ned Stark's going to be resurrected. He's just been in hell fighting for our souls.
Speaking of spoilers, I should probably throw this out there, and I'll give a big old spoiler alert when we're going to go into spoilerific territory, yes.
but
just be prepared. We're definitely going to be, spoiling some things if you're not careful. So I thought we could start off, ladies, with how we got into Game of Thrones, and not Game of Thrones is the correct phrase, but Song of Ice and Fire, because I think we both, or all three of us, got into the books first, pretty sure. So I know I have kind of a funny story about this.
Do it.
I kind of went on a date with this guy, and it was really weird because it led to one of the most romantic moments of my life. In that we were like outside and it was snowing and there was like snow on my eyelashes and stuff like that. And then like it kind of like weirdly petered off because it was during college. We went away for winter break and we came back. We just didn't talk to one another. It was really funny. But what was really great about it was that I like to say I take something good from every guy I've ever dated, even just been on one date with. And usually it's some form of conversation leads to a website or a book. And in this case, it led to Game of Thrones, me reading the first book in the Song of Ice and Fire series. And he was talking to me about how much I should read this book series because I'd read Wheel of Time and how if I liked Lord of the Rings, I was really going to like Game of Thrones. And I now curse that man.
That's a book.
How dare you? You jerk.
I like the idea of collecting things from dates. Like winnowing them away in a basket.
My date basket.
Date basket.
My gifts from men. So what about you ladies? How did you guys get into Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire?
I was bullied into it mostly. It was 2005. I was not at my normal college because mine was in New Orleans. Not working out
mm-hmm.
for that semester. And it was right before the fourth book came out, Peace for Crows, and my one friend that I was spending time with just was constantly telling, you have to read these, you have to read these. And then, oh look, George Martin's coming to sell and sign these books at a bookstore like 40 minutes away from where you are. We should go to that. And so we did, and I was literally reading the first third of the second book in the car on the way.
Wow.
Because I had, gone through the first book in, a day and a half, maybe.
Wow.
I was obviously paying a lot of attention to my four classes that
semester. Was I part of this bullying? I feel like I might have been.
Well, you might have. I think that you encouraged her.
Yeah, that's probably what I did.
I definitely read these. And then I was like, oh, God, I have to do this. And I was like, it was like I was going through a test. I was like cramming. And then you spent the whole time talking about
I do not.
I didn't actually know. And then he signed my book different from everybody else's because he has that character with my name twice that he treats terribly. I must have passed that part, so it must be in one of the first books where, she gets a sword quenched by dying.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy.
So everybody else was like, enjoy the feast, like George Martin, whatever, like name, enjoy the feast, George Martin. And mine said, all the best things. I'm sorry I horribly murdered someone with your exact name.
Yeah, because you have to, his wife willingly sacrifices himself. It's the sword of Azor Ahai,
Yeah,
it's he has to quench the fire within the flame, like, in order to, like, finish the sword. He jabs it into her chest.
Yep.
It's so it's like bad blacksmithing.
Literature has ever had my name. But yeah, and then
she was his most beloved wife
because I wasn't there yet, and it got destroyed in a fire drill with a sprinkler.
That was a sad story.
Yeah, it was terrible. At least she bought me a new copy. Like, his friend wasn't awful; it just wasn't signed anymore.
I was also told that I should read this book. I think it was actually our friend May Kwok. Was like, you should read these. At the time, I was recovering.
Viewers, she does, or listeners, I should say, she does actually sound a little bit like that.
She sounds like high pitch noises. But anyway,
I love stuff like that. But when she's trying to be persuasive,
I love you, man. Yeah. But anyway, so I picked up the first book. I was going through an angry at fantasy phase because, unlike people that were drawn into fantasy by like classic pieces of literature, my exposure to fantasy had everything to do with like the crap that I was picking up basically at random at the library.
Yeah.
And so I wound up on a big Melanie Ron spurt, and as we all know, she spurned my affections and didn't finish in a very important trilogy, and then I burnt it. but anyway, so this series seemed really, like, foolproof because the dude had already written 3 books in, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, no, Lindsay, this book series is going to be finished before you know it. There are 7 books. We all know that's how long it's going to take. You know, like, you're fine, lady. So I burned through those first 3 books. Like, I loved them from the instant I read them, from the instant I laid eyes on them. And I overlooked many of their flaws, and I did recommend them to numerous people. Yeah. And then it took forever for Feast of the Crows to come out. And then it took forever for, what's this latest book called? I'm sorry, Dance with Dragons.
Dance with Dragons.
To come out. So I have some germ anger, but I also have a lot of affection for both the books and the television series.
I ran out of steam after a while. Like, I got that 4th book as, you know, part of my inauguration, and I have never actually I read, like, the first third of it, but there was a Theon chapter that I just couldn't get through because I hated him too much, and I put it down and never picked it up again. Then I bought the 5th book, but I haven't read it. I have no idea.
You see, this
is what happens after the
this is where you both failed me, because I can't stop reading things once I've started, and then you guys were both at the same point I was, but now I am 2 books ahead of both of you, and I know so many more spoilers than you can ever imagine.
But I have to reread them, and it's just so much, so much commitment.
You don't have to reread them, just read the Wikipedia pages.
I was going to read...
It's true. I mean, like, how much are you getting from George R. Martin's writing style, and how much of those POV chapters are blatantly redundant at this point?
That's true.
How much do you actually
that's
care
true.
About half these people? Not
it is one of those things, though, where I feel like I really keep trying to restrain myself from reading all of the books. I know I've written about this on the blog, but I really don't want to read the 5th one until I know for sure there's a 6th one.
Right, because there's going to be another one?
Yeah, because I feel like I'm at a point where, because I've really only read up until book 3. I started to read book 4, but I can't remember anything that happens. And it was basically that I...
You can't remember anything that happens in book 3?
No, in book 4. Like, I started to read book 4, but I don't remember where I stopped.
I remember, but I think...
Nothing happens in book 4, it's fine.
That's what I kind of heard, so that's one of the reasons why I stopped, was because I was like, oh, I should wait until book 5 comes out so I know that there's a book that something happens in, because there was a naive time when I thought that that would always be true.
Yeah.
I have that thing of, like, I now am afraid to read book 5, so I want to read book 4 now, but I'm afraid to read book 5 until I know the book 6 has come out, and part of it's because book 3... while a lot of stuff goes down and there's still definite cliffhangers, it's almost a good stopping point. If for some reason, if for some reason he never finishes them, I was like, I would be okay with the books ending here. There's so many possibilities.
Not at all.
That's true. That's a good. I'm gonna claim that as my reason also.
Oh, you guys. Book 3 is not a good stopping point. What planet do you live on?
Like, back from the dead. Oh, yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, I'm glad we all, you know, got to recap what brought us into this mess in the first place.
Yes.
Also, Arya is only just starting to go absolutely fucking insane at the end of
the
movie.
Oh, man.
I know. I'm really worried
she's going to turn out, like, super psychotic.
Well, I hope she turns out. Well, here's we'll get into this a little bit later on, but I'm really curious to see what the futures of some of these kids are in terms of, obviously he's not done with a body count, so who's going to survive this series is a good question,
no
I think, to
one,
end
I'm
on.
Sure.
So we're going to start talking here about some very spoilerific things, so just as a heads up, big spoiler alert in capital letters. We're going to start talking about the adaptation of Game of Thrones. We're going to assume that you know something about it if you've gone past the spoiler alert. If you do not and you are taking that giant risk, please read Wikipedia pages. We thought about doing a recap and then realized it would just take too long. It's too intricate for both show and books. So why don't we start off with what I was thinking. You know, it's very interesting because this show has such a rabid following, or I'm sorry, these books have such a rabid following. Doing the show, I mean, hats off to David and
Benioff?
I always forget their names.
It's Benioff, isn't it? What's the other guy's name?
I think
something
right.
Weiss.
Yeah, I always think Dave Weiss.
I do too. But yeah, it's one of those things where I can never remember their names. But essentially, they've done a really great job of adapting these books. However, there are a lot of things that happen in these books, and I can't imagine being a new viewer watching this happen and not knowing it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Case in point, when Ned Stark was beheaded, and it was episode 9 of the first season, it's called Baelor, so many people I knew said that they were going to stop watching the show, because up until that point, he was the only clear protagonist that we had.
He remains pretty much the only clear protagonist of the series.
Yeah,
he's the only honorable person.
Yeah. Right? He's the only good person there ever was.
Yeah.
He's dead.
So yeah, I mean, how did you guys react when you first read that in the books?
I mean, I remember being stunned, but really excited by it. Just because
I loved,
and I was reading
it
at a particularly bloodthirsty period of my life, but I remember thinking I loved that it was an author that was willing to sacrifice this integral
That's
protagonist.
True. I remember thinking the same, like I was patently shocked in the same way that a lot of the viewers were watching this, just like, no, but he's who this is about, like, who is it about if it's not about him?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
And, you know, he was the only person who was decent and, like, was really trying to be a good person. So, like, who do I care about now?
I also liked it, though, because I felt like it taught us a lesson about the rules of Westeros, where being kind
and
being, like, honorable.
I thought it was really bold for that reason, and I thought, you know, I was very impressed with it as a choice. Because killing a character is always an important choice to make.
Yeah.
And doing it well, and especially in a way that you don't, that your readers don't think is possible.
Yeah.
You know, it just really flexes your muscles as an author and goes like, no, I'm in charge here.
Yeah. I liked it too because...
You don't get to say.
I'm sorry. I liked it because if you weren't paying attention, you were like, but Ned Stark's worldview is the right worldview. Ned Stark is right. Like, you have this sense, like, from the first scenes onward that he's an authority. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you sort of are just like, he's here and he's going to clean out these vermin and he's going to fix King's Landing. Like, the book that I thought I was going to read and the series I thought I was going to read were so drastically different from the assumption I made when I was first reading it, because I thought that Ned Stark was right. Finding out that Ned Stark was dead was less shocking to me, perhaps, than finding out that Ned Stark was wrong.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. That's the thing. It really puts everything he's done into perspective. And now, I love the meme that's kind of like, Ned Stark's an idiot, and I can't remember what it's actually
Dumb
called.
Ned Stark is
Dumb
what
Ned
it's called.
Stark, yeah. Which is hilarious.
I still don't think he was wrong, though.
No, but...
I don't think he's morally wrong, but in terms of the rules of that world, and in terms of, like, how to behave...
Well, yes. I mean, if he thought he was going to survive this, he was, you know...
And
I'm hoping for a lot more out of those people.
But even in terms of, like, what's right, one of the things that, and we'll kind of get into this, that I kind of like about the show as far as adaptation goes, is we've kind of talked about how Cersei is a much more sympathetic character on the television show versus the books, and it feels less like he is technically in the morally right, but there's an element to it where you're kind of like, I mean, I kind of see at times, not as drastically as she has, you know, made these choices, but I can kind of see where she's coming from on a lot of these choices that she's made. Like, you can kind of not, you know, incest, but I mean...
right, like, her, that's kind of a good one there.
Her reaction, though, to Ned Stark is very much kind of like, I'm now going to kill you because otherwise you're going to get me and my kids killed. Like, that's essentially true. Her reaction. And so there's an element, and I remember reading the books and just hating her so much in that moment. Well, she's awful. But in the show, there's something about seeing someone's reaction to something. Yeah. There's something about visually watching somebody react to something that automatically lends a little bit more, if they're a good enough actor. And adds a little bit more depth to that character. So. Oh, she's awesome.
She
I
just
love
makes
her.
Cersei seem so much smarter to me. Like,
that's true. Yeah. Cersei is so stupid in the book. Yes. She's sitting there like, oh, I'm so clever. Look at me. Oh, and everybody's like, no, seriously.
There's
exactly what you're doing.
Something about the calculating turn of Lena Headey's take on Cersei that is very appealing. And I would say too that one of the things where the series benefits, I'm sorry, the television series benefits that the book series doesn't have. Is, like, in the television series, we see that Robert Baratheon is this, like, ponderous asshole. Like, who's just being a jerk the vast majority of the time. Whereas in the books, like, you kind of get that to a degree. Like, you sense Ned's disappointment in him. You read that on the page. Right? Yeah. But it's still Ned's... Like, we don't get viewpoints from Robert Baratheon, and we don't get viewpoints from Cersei until, I think, is it book three or book four?
The fourth book.
So it's just, it's really interesting because we leave this format that I think that if you're going to make an argument about George R. R. Martin's writing, I think his use of the POV is very smart for what he's tried to do. But I really love the omniscience of the camera.
Yeah. That's
I like that they've embraced that too in terms of how they've really kind of gone into, like they have that scene between Robert and Cersei. Pretty early on, I think, in the series, and you really get to see this sense of, like, a sadness to them, where she knows, like, there was a point at which they could have loved one another, and he fucked it up, and there's that element of, like, she almost loved him, there's a sense, like, she wouldn't
have made the effort, you know,
but he was so hung up on Lyanna, is it Lyanna, is that her name?
Yeah.
And he just would not let it go, and would not let her... Almost like he held her responsible for the sins of her father in terms of having been so tied up with the Targaryens initially. And so he could never forgive her. And as a result, she basically was kind of like, well, then I fucking hate you. And I'm going to undermine everything you do.
And now the lines are drawn.
Now the lines are drawn. Obviously there's more deaths. We were talking about how with the deaths, I know I, for one, tend to recognize what series I'm in or what book I'm in by how many people have died and who has died. Book two being not that bloody, considering not of main
characters. A lot of unnamed people die.
But what about, I mean, I'm wondering how people are gonna react to the Red Wedding. That's gonna be crazy, because you know that they, let me look this up, but the penultimate episode, I believe, it sounds like it's going to be the Red Wedding, because
they're gonna save it that long.
Well, because the show,
the book.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is seasons 3 and 4 are book 3. So they split in half.
Yeah, because there's so much that happens.
Yeah, and so there's supposedly, I can't find it. Oh, here it is, the Reigns of Castamere, which is the song that is sung at Robb Stark's wedding, at the Red Wedding. And so I'm pretty sure that episode 9 is actually going to be...
Joff's death,
the Red Wedding, and Robb's death. I was thinking they were going to save it for the next season because Robb Stark is such a popular character. I thought maybe they would try to, like, draw it out more, but they're really
different. I think. Robb Stark is just, like, I like him so much more in the show. Than I ever did reading the books. Like,
he's another
I
one
who want him to live through this.
I know
he's such a babe too.
He's a hot man.
I am so into him.
He's so attractive. Also, he's dating Jenna Coleman. Jenna Louise Coleman, who is the new Doctor Who companion, so like the nerdiest couple ever. But I think this is another one where the show has benefited from ignoring the POVs written into the books, because we never get Rob's point of view.
Okay.
I think that's a big one. So upcoming Red Wedding, I'm really I'm curious to see how they're going to how not only are they going to handle it, but how new watchers,
like how people are going to handle it.
Hopefully the show is kind of with Ned Stark, kind of the way the books do. It really sets the tone.
I think after Ned Stark, everything else, like, you can handle it a little bit better. Like, it still sucks. But if the Red Wedding came before Ned Stark, like...
Well, I know a couple of people who have said, I know people who were originally like, I'm not going to finish watching this show after Ned died. And then they went back and they started watching the show again. They're like, well, I'm fine. I mean, as long as I have Robb Stark, it's totally fine. And I'm just like, oh God, I'm so sorry. I can't tell you any of
this. That's sort of what you do though. Like in the books, you're like, okay, well, I like this person now. And then that person dies. And you're like, shit. Well, I like this person now. And then you start to be like, I can't like anybody. I hate you all. You're just going to die on me.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's really interesting the way they handled it on the show again, because they made Tyrion basically the protagonist of the second season.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely kept Robb Stark in a place of prominence. Like, they don't shy away from putting him sort of in the spotlight and making you really care about him.
You can't lose that, but part of the experience of the series, right, like when you're reading the book series, is the experience of the cruelty of Westeros. Yeah. And also, like, you know, like, it's just, it's a tough place. If you make these mistakes, you're not going to live. And, like, the Stark fellas made these mistakes. Robb Stark married the wrong girl, even though the right girl had been laid out in front of him, like, a fucking, like, present, and he just couldn't do his job.
Right? The right political decision was made for him, and he ignored it.
And, I mean, I don't blame him for not liking Catelyn Stark, you know, picking his wife or whatever, but, like, it's wartime, dude. Man up. Like,
right, also, you're a king. You don't get to make your own choices. That's how this works. This is what we learned about kingship.
And it's also kind of, like, that's how it works in general, I feel like, in this world. Like, him wanting, you know, true love in many ways shows his youth, which is kind of interesting because we forget how young they are.
Yeah.
He wants true love.
Like, 15, 16?
Yeah, I mean, they've really, like, they have to grow up fast, and obviously this is based more on, like, medieval kind of War of the Roses type world and time period. However, there is this idea that he's being very childish in this. In this world, to be an adult, you have to accept the fact that you're probably not going to get to marry the person you want to marry.
Right.
That's what mistresses are for in this world.
So far, literally no one has.
Nope. Well, that's the thing is, like, even Ned and Catelyn, which have... I mean, and I think on the show, they've talked about this on AV Club, which I think is very interesting, but the romances in the books and in the show don't really play as well. Like, it's very hard to care about couples, I feel like, on the show, except for Ned and Catelyn, or Catelyn, or however they pronounce her name. I think it's Catelyn. But I always want to call her Catelyn.
Spell Catelyn.
Well, isn't it Catelyn?
Yeah.
No, it's Catelyn.
Yeah, I guess it's either way.
But everyone calls her Cat, and, like, on the show, I feel like they're always saying Catelyn.
Yeah.
Well,
they say it that way on the TV. I just,
I feel like that's how I feel about, that's how I always, that's what I think about a lot of things, when I hear the pronunciation actually spoken
out loud. That's how I felt about Legend of the Seeker for, like, 3 episodes I watched today.
Yeah. But they, one of the things that's kind of interesting, in terms of those romances, is that Ned and Catelyn, or Catelyn, can't stop now.
Whatever.
really are this believable romance, but they're the exception to the rule. So again, Ned Stark gets this charmed... He has kind of a charmed existence.
Yeah, and it's part of what has informed his worldview. Like,
it really has.
He has, like... He, like, has a father figure who's, like, perfectly loyal in the form of Peter Aaron. He has a brother figure who's perfectly loyal in the form of Robert Baratheon. And as a result, he comes to expect standards of morality that are nowhere else in this world. And that's why he dies, is that he expects people to be decent, and he's not really in a decent world. And so that's why I thought it was so shocking, and that's why I said earlier, like, there's the shock of realizing just how bad Westeros is. And it's terrible. And then you decide whether or not you're going to keep reading and keep watching based on whether or not you think that it's redeemable, whether or not you think one of these candidates for the kingship is going to make this better. Because
is anybody who's left worth it, you know?
Yeah.
No, exactly. Well, and we also have one of the things that I think is really interesting, and that's a danger of adapting a book to a television show, is that they've had to really move around the story in such a way, and kind of avoiding, in terms of, like, the Red Wedding, and spoiling for, like, the Red Wedding, or any of the other bad things that are to come, because Westeros is so cruel. They've had to really change around some of the storytelling, because visually speaking, there are things in a book that you can kind of, that are foggier, that, well, because it's a point of view, you know, to give an example, you have Daenerys' vision in the House of the Undying, and at one point she steps into the throne room, and in the book, there's a figure that's described that you don't really realize is Robb Stark, but it's very clearly Robb Stark with a wolf's head sitting on a throne, and it is very much this vision of the desecration of his body that takes place after he's died. And it's this foreshadowing of the Red Wedding, and you don't realize it at the time, or you don't really know it for sure, because Dany doesn't know what Robb Stark looks like. So right. She's just describing this character, and you're kind of like, oh, that's weird. And then in your head, you're like, maybe that means Robb Stark will win? Like, he's going to be...
Right, because he's on the throne, right?
Because he's on the throne. It's a wolf's head, so you know it's kind of like a Stark something. However, it's in the show that you do see her in the throne room, and I think they get around it by having it kind of be shot from the back, but you really can't even tell what type of animal it is on the throne.
No.
Because seeing it, we know what Robb Stark looks like. We would immediately know this has to do with Robb Stark somehow, and we might even know that it was him dying automatically. So that's like, I mean, that was the last episode of last season. I think it's called Valar Morghulis. I can never pronounce anything that George R. R. Martin writes. I would not meant to. Yeah, that's the way he likes it. In a very Tolkien-esque manner.
Well, except that he hasn't put in the time like Tolkien to make a whole language that makes sense.
Well, or Star Trek. Yes,
there's good and bad in that. The good in that is that we don't necessarily... We do get still just as many songs, I feel like. But however, they're written in a language that we at least understand. that's my critique of Tolkien.
He just liked his languages, all right? He wanted to write some books so that he could use the languages.
Probably. It does feel like that sometimes.
That's definitely how it works.
This makes it sound like I dislike Tolkien. I really love Tolkien. That's not a problem. I'm trying to think if there's any other aspects of... And remind me, but in not just in her vision, but in general, of any kind of story or plotting that they've kind of changed around to avoid spoiling. I think that's the biggest one, really.
No, but I mean, we're going to come into more because he's so into omens and portents. And so, like, sometimes we lose things. Like, you know, like, in Ned's monologue, that's where we get information about Lyanna quite often. Yeah. And, like, John's parentage, all of our hints to that came from, you know, you saw in his head the dying Lyanna in the Tower of Joy where she died, telling him that he needed to take care of her child, you know, and to promise me Ned. And so, like, I think that in an effort to avoid some of that stuff, you lose nuance, I think, more than, like, the fear of spoilers comes into it, or, like, the story of the masked knight at the tourney.
Yeah.
Which is so important, which we get from, like, four different people in, like, three different books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we haven't gotten it yet, but I'm really stoked because, and we'll talk about this more, there are characters entering the scene that I think we're going to get that information from.
Well, and things like, in the show, I think this is more to do with brevity of form than anything else, but, like, there's a lot of relationships that are sort of really glossed over. Like, I don't think we have any true sense of how much Caitlin hates Jon Snow.
Nope.
Or how, you know, what question there might be about whether or not Jon Snow is Ned's bastard, as, you know, like, I don't think we have any reason to doubt that in the show.
No.
Well,
aside from the point at which he turns to Jon Snow when their ways part, when he is heading south and Jon Snow is going to continue north to the wall, and he says, like, Jon's like, you'll tell me about my mother? And he's like, yes, when next we meet, I'll tell you all about your mother. And so, like, I think that's what we got.
It's really interesting because on the internet, there was kind of this explosion of, like, people have been, who are new to the show that I've spoken with, people who have not read the books, have no clue about John's parentage being even remotely in question.
Right.
And I actually think that's something of a choice that they've made, because it's something they can kind of expose later on. I wonder if it's a strategy they've used in case George R. R. Martin never actually finishes the books, so that if it's not called in question, they don't have to bring it up again, yeah, possibly. But
well, I feel like if the ending is anything like I think it's going to be, they're going to have to.
They're going to have to. Well, and supposedly the show, they have come out and said that even if, like, say, the show outruns the books, they said they're not going to pad the series to make it match up with the books. So basically, if George R. R. Martin doesn't write these books, they will overtake him, and no questions asked. And he's given
reasonable.
I think that's absolutely reasonable, and I think it's the best choice they can make. I like that they're not sacrificing their art for, you know, the...
For his shittiness.
Because
they said 10 seasons would kill the... They said it's 10 seasons would kill the show. Like, which if he takes that long, and I don't think it's unreasonable to think that, like, the way he keeps talking about how he's struggling with this book. And, like, the thing is, I'm not entirely reassured, having read books 4 and 5, that he can finish this sucker up in books 6 and 7. Like, I just don't necessarily see it happening. So I'm really happy they know how it ends, because I just want someone with a quality of craftsmanship to have that on hand. And honestly, at this point, I trust HBO more than I trust George R. R. Martin.
Well,
and I mean, I think they've done some really interesting stuff with the show in general. And I mean, we talked about some of the nuance that I think is lost. I think some of it's done in a way to try to make certain characters more likable.
Yeah.
So things like making Caitlin seem like she hates John a little less, I think is more actually done in order to keep her from being a character you hate so much. Same thing with Sansa, in terms of her not being quite as directly culpable for her father's beheading.
Mm-hmm.
Really kind of trying, and having her anger. I mean, she's still horrible, don't get me wrong, but she, it is kind of this idea that they really have tried to make these characters more three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And as a result, your feelings about them are much more sympathetic.
Yeah.
That's true.
It doesn't necessarily mean you like them, but it means that you understand where they're coming from.
Oftentimes, and it's funny because, like, George R. R. Martin has full chapters of points of view for many of them. Oftentimes, the show is better at making me understand the motives behind actions than he is. Like, Theon Greyjoy, for example, like, leaving Robb Stark's alliance, like, I felt like I understood it much more, like, and, like, spinning, like, going to this, like, extreme position, it made more sense to me, and it was done in a much more sympathetic way.
That's true. In the show, they've, you know, at least given him some sympathetic qualities, but I still hate him.
And we'll talk about this a little bit later on, because there are definitely characters that we like more on the show, or at least I do, that I like more on the show than I do in the books, and also vice versa. There are certain things with portrayal that change your opinion of a character. But one of the things I think is really interesting is they've added characters in, these sort of smaller characters that really only had maybe one or two lines, or maybe even just a mention in the books, and they've become much more main characters, something like Roz, who's a very interesting character. And she represents not just kind of a woman's role in terms of a poor woman's role.
Yeah.
We forget that a lot of the people that we're watching.
Yeah, the rich ladies.
We get to see a lot of the rich ladies. And life doesn't necessarily mean, like, especially in the North, being rich is still obviously a privilege and still good, but it's a much harder existence than it is in the South.
Yeah.
Caitlin, I'm just going to keep calling her Kat, definitely has a harder worldview than I would say, like, obviously Cersei, although Cersei's clearly had a very difficult life.
Yeah, I would actually say the opposite. Like, in the scenes when they're hanging out, it's like different kinds of hardness, like, different kinds of toughness.
Yeah.
Like, Catelyn is tough about, like, weather and, like, hard harvests and, like, the day-to-day running of a castle, whereas Cersei is just, like, she's, like, full-blown catty bitch from high school that, like, still has to be that 100% of the time. Like, that scene where they first meet and they're hanging out and, like, Cersei's like, oh, a great beauty, she shouldn't be left up in the North, and it's clearly, like, a jab at Catelyn.
Yeah.
Like, well, but you can live up here because you're ugly town. Like, I mean, it's just... Or, like, when Cersei, like, you know, like, Cersei's just she's a stone cold. She's a stone cold killer, and it's just, it's different. Like, I love them. I love comparing them just because I find them to be a fascinating, like, pair of ladies that were, like, you know, married to this set of best friends, and so, like, who were basically brothers. So they're basically, like, their lives are linked in this way that they never would have chosen.
It's really interesting in exploring kind of the relationships between women as well. And again, we'll do this a little bit later on after our next break. But it's just interesting kind of taking a look at the relationships between women. And some of that is shown. You get to see that in the whorehouses. And you see that with Roz. And you see that in their relationship with one another and in their relationship with men. And very much, I'm sure the show uses this. Granted, obviously, there's been a lot made about the nudity on the show. It wasn't as bad in the second season as it was in the first, I felt like. But it was still...
It was still game of boobs, though.
It was still game of boobs. I feel like we, you know, we talked about this earlier as well, but, the, you know, there needs to be a hashtag of ad boobs, which would be HBO's reaction to almost every episode.
Right. Oh, God, this episode is full of character development. Ad boobs.
Yeah. Ad boobs. Well, I think could this really long monologue perhaps be set in a whorehouse with two women having sex in the background?
Right.
Fingering one another's assholes.
Right?
Yeah, like, it's just, the thing about it is, like, and it bothers me to a degree because I can't help but think it's HBO thinking that people can't deal with a series that's, like, not, like, highly sexualized, right? Like, it feels like an underestimation of the audience, right? And, like, in season one, it was slightly more forgivable because I was like, you're afraid that there's no way on earth that this super expensive nerd show is going to do as well as you need it to do. But now that it's, like, the success that it is, like, I feel like we can all, like, you know, like, I am fine with, like, character-driven sex scenes. And I am fine with, like, occasional sex scenes that aren't character-driven at all.
Oh,
like, there's a lot of pretty people on this show. They can have sex. But I don't need it as often as HBO seems to think that I do.
Yeah. Correct. And then it's interesting because we do get this perspective. One of the things I like about them kind of adding somebody like Roz, and even though it is a lot of times it does lead to most of these very sexualized scenes, we do get a chance to kind of see the little person's perspective in Westeros, the people who are poor, the people who have a lot of, basically they have the most at stake and yet they have the least amount of say in what's happening.
I'm so sorry. There's that really good scene where they're at the tournament and Sansa's talking about how lovely it is for the small folk to, like, have this experience. And, like, you know, like, they must be so happy to, like, see, like, the great lords or whatever. And, like, Littlefinger's like, the small folk don't care about us. Like, they care if, like, their harvest comes in, and they care if their children live. And, you know, like, I think it's a really great scene because it puts it in perspective. But, like, having, like, the character of Roz there, having, like, Ygritte and the Wildings there, like, these are, like, even the whole wall, Daenerys living with the Horse Lords, and, like, you know, like, you get these perspectives that you just wouldn't have if the show were exclusively at King's Landing, and I think that's the real value of this, like, the scope of the world that George R. R. Martin
has. You see the problems that people who aren't in the Game of Thrones are having, like, and how much, and at the same time, how little the war affects them.
Well, how much or how little, because it's like, they don't care about it. I think there's a couple of scenes, actually, where they have people who are kind of like...
substantially, you know, when the war is over, how much are their lives going to be different? Not very. Like, a peasant's life is pretty much a peasant's life at that stage of the game.
And but, I think there are a few characters who actually...
With the war on,
everybody's
dying all the time, much faster than they would anyway.
Exactly. You know? There's this sense of, like, I think there's a scene, I'm maybe making this up, but I thought there was a scene where they kind of, like, one of the sides comes into a village and they're basically like, what side do you stand for? And they're like, what side are you?
Who are you guys?
Side you want us to be on? Or, like, there are so many people who are in the territory of a particular king but actually have not sworn allegiance to anybody.
Right.
And because they're within the lands of that particular king, they're, you know, their village is raised to the ground.
Another character that's really good for the perspective also is Bronn the Sellsword.
Yeah.
Who defends
he's great.
Like, because he's just, like, right, like, he's up for grabs, he's up for, like, you know, like, profit and stuff, and he does form this real bond with Tyrion, and it shows you just how, like, personable and, like, real and friendly Tyrion can be. Like, Tyrion's hanging out with whores and sellswords all the time.
Yeah,
and that's
but he's
part
possibly the only legitimately charming character we have.
Yeah.
Like, he can be a real person and nobody else can figure that out.
And actually, in that scene where Tyrion gets arrested, there's a really great, and it only happens for a half second, but, like, Catelyn Tully is, like, calling, like, all of these, like, bannermen of her father to help her arrest this Lannister because he's so big and powerful. And so, like, all of them are standing up, and she, like, names them off based on their bannermen, like, who they stand with and why they have to be loyal to her as she makes this move. But there's one guy that stands up and just, like, rolls his eyes. Like, dude, I've got shit to do.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just like, yes, that feels like a really honest perspective.
To walk in here and tell me what to do, like...
And there was, like, a huge backlash amid book fans about Roz and about characters like her that are being created in the series, like, the television series exclusively. But I think it's invaluable because we're losing, again, the nuance that we got from some of, like, the internal monologue and some of what characters are seeing in the books.
Well, so we need to add it back in. Well, I think it's important to have some continuity, like, with how fast, you know, the faces in various places change amongst who you think of as the main characters, you know, and the relationships change so fast and everything's going. Like, I think it's important to have some continuity reminding us that, yeah, for everybody else, it's not so different. Like, these people still have to make a living. It's still hard. There's still sickness and, you know, filth everywhere. Like, it still sucks to be a girl. Like,
yeah. She's the stand-in for everybody else, I feel like. Yeah,
right.
She gets to be, everything happens to her, which sucks for her as a person.
Right.
But as a character, like, it really allows the audience to kind of see that different perspective and puts things in perspective for them. Because you yourself get so wrapped up in this war and who's going to win, and you have a side that you are definitely rooting for, and it is always the Starks. Like, there is, I don't know a single person who's rooting for anyone else. Like, nobody is rooting for Stannis Baratheon. Nobody is rooting for... Do you know what I mean? Like, you're always rooting for the Starks. You can't help it.
Well, I'm rooting for Dany to win, though.
Well, that's true, yeah. I mean, it's like, between those people who are actually in Westeros, I would say that it's probably the Starks. However, outside of that, everybody wants to... Because also, you get this really good sense, and you see it... I think you'll probably see it more...
It's so traditional, though, for, like, the usurped kings that, you know... last-minute save child to come back and put the throne back in its rightful hands. That's so traditional.
Well, but she's a woman.
I mean, she's
had sex. She's on, like, husband number two. Not that you guys would know that. Like, and, like, I really think that because they've turned... Because George R. R. Martin has done a good job of turning her into a less traditional, like, prodigal son returning... It bothers me less than it might.
I also don't think she'll be able to do it by herself.
I don't think she'll be able to hold the throne.
Part of my personal theory about what's going to happen at the end.
Honestly, like, if I had to, I mean, I don't even know who's going to wind up where. Like, part of me thinks that all of it, like, you know, like how Westeros is the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
Part of me
thinks
it's all going to come apart again. Like, I don't know if I believe in the unification of these countries.
I think that he believes too firmly that he decided that, you know, the War of the Roses is how he started this. So I don't think it's going to break back into a Heptarchy. But I feel like I know what's going to happen, and I kind of hope it works out the way I think it will. But.
Well, I want to hear your prediction someday.
Yeah, we'll save it for the end, because I think we'll all have predictions about what the third season's going to bring as well. But one of the things that's going to be interesting, I think, with the third season is that Daenerys really does, she... is shown in the third book to have this great sense of compassion, which is something that ties into how much of the little people I think we're seeing, in that she seems to stand up for the little, as much as she's fighting obviously for her own family's like right to rule, she also is very interested, I think, in standing up for those little people on this list.
She cares about her people. Like, this is a thing that we see time and time again. Like, she cares that they have enough to eat. She cares that they're tired and dirty, and, like, she cares that they don't rape these people just because they're there. Like,
yeah,
you know, and
exactly.
She puts herself in the path of making that not happen. Like,
well, I think
she actually actively tries to fix things.
And I think it also has to do with the fact that Dany, like, has always been in such insecure situations.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a Robb Stark who is raised for power, whether or not he was raised for kingship. Like, he was raised for a lordship. It's not that far of a reach. With Dany, like, you know, like, it's all this, it's basically in her imagination. Like, she's never even been to the Seven Kingdoms.
Right.
You know, and that's part of what's so fascinating about it. Like, I just...
Right. She has no idea what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I think we're at a pretty good stopping point right now. So we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to kind of talk about what we've liked about the adaptation so far. We've kind of touched on this a little bit, and how we think women are faring in this adaptation versus the books. All right, so we'll see you soon. Jungle of Death. I'm back here again with Nyssa and Lindsay. Say hello, ladies.
Yo!
And we are discussing Game of Thrones. It's more specifically the adaptation of the books to the show. Since the show, once this has aired, will have already aired once we put this up. But you'll kind of get an opportunity to review, perhaps, before watching that episode. So I think with the adaptation, one of the things I wanted to get a perspective on is, how do you guys think it's going? Like, what do you think?
To me, and I know that this is probably sacrilege to some, like, fans of A Song of Ice and Fire, and you do lose some, like, really cool backstory stuff, but I think that it's an improvement in almost every way possible.
I would say I agree with that, absolutely.
I think that it's got the efficiency that we talked about a little bit when we were watching Warm Bodies. It handles things really well. It does good stuff with visuals. It does good stuff with, like, building backstory and anything they need to fill in about, like, the Blackfyre Rebellion or Robert's Rebellion or, you know, the Rise of the Targaryens. They've done a really good job of doing that with those animated shorts that they release with the Blu-rays that I posted about recently. And I don't think that we're losing that much of the depth of the world at this point that I can, like, complain about it.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of detail loss, but I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. It is much cleaner in the efficiency way that you're talking. Like, it's much easier to follow, first of all.
Yes.
Like, it's a lot less of the, wait, who is this person? I know I read about them before. Like, flip back 100 pages. Who is that?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
But I think some of the additions, like when we talked about, you know, that it needs more boobs, like, I think that's sort of a detraction. I think it does, I think it diminishes the quality of the adaptation. But, I mean, not to the point where I wouldn't, like, I could see myself rewatching the entire series, however many seasons it does end up going, more often than I would try and reread the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, well, didn't we talk about this? We had a commenter who was saying that she was like, do I have to turn on my nerd card if I don't like Game of Thrones? Yeah, she wanted to know
if she can be a nerd anymore if she doesn't like it because, you know, the rapiness and the misogyny, it just really bothered her a lot. And it's like,
which is fair.
There's a lot of rape and there's a lot of misogyny.
That's a much more legitimate reason to not like it than a lot of people who are actually liking the series.
Well, and there's also, like, there's a sense, like, when people say they don't like it, a lot of times it's because what the show is doing is, like, taking chances with, like, storytelling, or, like, they don't like that their characters could get killed off, or they don't like...
Right.
I think it's a very legitimate reason to say that the amount of abusive women in the show really makes me feel uncomfortable. I think that's absolutely fair. And that's that is something that they, I think, carry over from the books, because it's definitely a hard world for women to live in general.
It's extremely misogynist.
Yeah.
In the books.
And the way he uses rape.
Even considering there would be a show. What?
Yeah.
The way he uses rape as a literary device is sometimes a little...
It's gross.
It's super gross. It's icky.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. I think that there's definitely, I would, talking about, like, things that you might change in the show, I definitely would not have quite as many gratuitous sex scenes, things that have absolutely no value. It really does bother me that, I think it was in the first season, Littlefinger's big monologue in his whorehouse. I don't want to call it a brothel because I feel like that's not even what it is.
Right, it's not even that classy.
But I got the impression from both the show and the books that it's sort of fancy, right? Like, if you compare it to, like
the fanciest whorehouse in town.
Roz, like, leaves the North. She leaves her whorehouse situation to, like, go down and, like, audition for this fancy whorehouse.
Right.
But there's this sense of that monologue that he does where there are two women practicing on one another and, like, having sex with one another.
Right behind him.
Yeah. That was probably the most problematic scene that I have witnessed on the show. Right.
What is the point of that HBO?
Well, because everything else, you could kind of, like, some of it, you could sort of stretch it. You could kind of,
it's sort of character development.
But that was one where it was just purely to have something going on in the background. And that was the most problematic scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the thing is, too, like, in the book, there are lots of problematic scenes. Like, that first book, like, when Daenerys loses her virginity on her wedding night. Yeah. Like, there's very clearly, like, you're not, you're 100% sure that this isn't exactly consensual. And, like, their ongoing sexual relationship is really problematic. Especially when you consider the fact that she's 12 years old.
Like, right? I guess this is my thing. Maybe I've misremembered this. I thought in the book that it was clear, it was much more clear that it was a choice from her end as opposed to
the first time, I think it's pretty clear in the book that it's rape.
It's,
No, I thought he says yes, and she says yes.
Yeah,
and
so but
it's not 100%. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's like 100%.
But also, she's 12.
Yeah.
No, like, I agree. But in the word,
guys, she says yes because he stuck a finger in her. It's different than sticking your dick in somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I just think that the show, like, HBO did a really good job of de-ickifying it a bit, but, like, those scenes are very problematic, like, if you haven't read the books, because, like, when I'm comparing it to the books, I'm like, oh, this is so much less icky, like, this turned around in one episode instead of, like, two chapters of me feeling sad for her riding a horse and feeling super sore because she's having sex when she's tiny, you know, like, so, like, from that perspective, like, I get exactly what your friend is saying, because, like, when you have that point of comparison, you're always like, this show's so much less icky, but it's still kind of icky. Like, it's an icky world. Like, and, like, ultimately, that's my feeling on it, is you either, like, my feelings about the books and the series, like, both have to do with my desire for someone to come in and, like, sort of fix what's broken. I know that that's not exactly the conclusion we're coming towards.
Right, that's not what's
happening. But, like, honestly, like, in my head, that's what it is,
100%. Right, that's what you want. And I don't think that, you know, not liking something for completely legitimate reasons like this, you know, means any series, really. I don't think there's any one thing that means you have to turn in your geek card.
Yeah.
Because you don't like it for a good reason. Like,
well,
I think that shows so much more consideration, you know, than a lot of people who bandy around, like, oh, yeah, I'm a geek because I like Doctor Who, like...
Yeah.
Okay, but how much thought have you put into this? Like, I mean, you don't have to think about it. No one says you have to, but, like, you can't then turn around and say, well, because you don't like Game of Thrones, you don't get to be a geek. Like,
well, I think being a nerd is very much about just liking what you like for the reasons why you like it. And nobody should, like, the whole point of being a nerd is that nobody judges you for what you like. The problem is that it's become much more judgy kind of community.
Well, as these things get more and more popular and being geeky becomes more, like, desired.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, how geeky you are becomes a hipster contest. Like,
I mean, how much of do we think the ickiness is built into this world in terms of it is based on a kind of medieval type feeling?
I think it's entirely possible to have a medieval feeling world that is just as fantastical as Westeros without making it disgusting.
I think it is definitely a choice, but there is this question, and this is not, I'm playing devil's advocate here, because this is always the argument I hear. Do you guys think it would be as realistic if women were treated much better, or do you think there's just a better way to portray...
Is it realistic because there's dragons?
Yeah, exactly. It's a fantasy novel. It's a fantasy novel that's invoking certain, like, atmospheric, like, qualities of the Middle Ages, like the Dark Ages, and you're just like, ugh.
Like, we're willing to accept that, you know, misogyny and horrible rapiness is just part of having a medieval setting, but we're okay with adding magic and dragons and people coming back from the dead.
You've got to,
like... those are choices, but misogyny is just
if you what say, has to happen. No, I would be much more into he is conveying a cruel place, like, than he is, like, evoking a Middle Ages thing. Because then, like, I can, like, be like, yeah, this place is just bullshit. And, like, I buy it on all sides. Like, I want to live in Dorne. Like, they're treating people better there.
But that's how I got into this argument one time, and...
Yeah. Dorne seems like the place to live, man.
I got into this argument one time, and, like...
It's a really nice place.
Descended into a shouting match, and the other person. It's like, well, that's how it was. It was like, when there were dragons in the War of the Roses?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That is not a legitimate.
It's an excuse and it's a cop out. And the thing is, like, he could do. It doesn't have to be the way it is either to creep me out and make my skin crawl and make me think that things are cool.
Like, I don't think the Middle Ages were as much like that as we feel comfortable thinking they were.
Yeah, because, like, the thing is,
as much as I know about the medieval period,
I feel like there was so much plague and so much food instability that probably people were too tired to get any sort of thing on. Anyway, but what I was going to say.
Well, and women were considered the primarily lecherous sex. Like, it was ladies who were slutting it up all the time, and dudes were not. Dudes were much more considered more scholarly and restrained.
Yeah, but those are also in the very few pieces of literature that we have that survived the Middle Ages. Like,
well,
how much
in, like, court records and stuff. Like, any sort of harassment suit was always brought against a lady.
Yeah, but again, who was in the position of power to file those claims?
Well, right, absolutely. I mean, it's just the worldview.
Yeah, I just think it's an incredibly problematic argument to make. And the thing is, like, even if, okay, like, I don't even expect him to not have rape at all. Like, I understand that, like, in wartime, to this day, rape is used as a weapon and a tool.
Absolutely.
But, like, the fact of the matter is, like, when he, like, sometimes, like, the story is, like, about, like, Tysha. Like, when we get the story of Tysha from Tyrion, like, I'm like, why are we telling the story this way? Like, you know, like, why is her rape necessary for his character development?
Right.
Like, that feels manipulative, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, it's gross. And so, yeah, George Martin's questionable feminism.
Yeah, it's
a serious concern, I think.
It's a serious and real concern.
So we're so I think that's a pretty good place to take a little bit of a break. So if you guys will join us here in a little bit, we're going to come back with our predictions for the season and possibly for the show as well. Okay, so we are back at the jungle, or in the jungle of death, I should say. And we're going to come back with our expectations and our predictions for this upcoming season. So we'll start off there.
What do you think's going to happen, you guys? I've got a feeling there might be a red wedding.
It seems like very big possibility.
The red wedding. The thing is, okay, so after the red wedding in the book, right, you just feel such joy in Joffrey's death. So I would say if there's...
I'm wondering where that's going to be. I think
like, if the last episode of the season you were saying is the What of Castamere? I always forget the first part.
Oh, the second to last episode is the Reigns of Castamere.
Well, they did Ned Stark in the second to last episode of the season.
Yeah. That's the song that's being sung at Joff's wedding. Like, it's sung, like, 4 or 5 times. Before he has his choking fit.
Oh,
so I think that we get Joff's death this season.
Holy shit.
That'd be so nice.
Well, and also, I mean, Jamie's going to lose his hand this season as well.
Thank God he becomes such a good person after that.
I can't wait for to like Jamie Lannister
like
both as
a person
and as an attractive man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I am excited for Brienne's bear fight, too.
Yeah, that looks awesome.
But yeah, predictions, I actually think that if that's the episode where Joffrey dies, we're going to get the Red Wedding much sooner than we expect. I'd say
that's
like 5 or 6 episodes in, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
Yeah, because it's the kind of thing like you want to think of it as like a cliffhanger, like a big mid-season finale sort of thing. But I feel like in terms of how the action falls around it, you kind of can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be in the middle of things.
Because it's such a clusterfuck of events.
It's interesting because I think my only thought process, though, is that because they've split the third book into 2 seasons, I'm wondering if Joffrey's death they're going to save for that 4th season because...
The opener, maybe? Well, no. It's really not that dramatic the way it happens.
It's totally dramatic.
Everyone wants Joffrey to die. Like, I think... Here's my prediction. My prediction is that because usually the way the show goes... something huge happens in the second to last episode, and then the last episode is a table setting episode for the next season. So
I'm wondering when we see the fucking army and the White Walkers, like, oh shit, that's gonna be a problem.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is, like, I'm wondering if they're gonna show basically the few moments leading up to Joffrey's death and kind of like showing, like, clearly something's going on, and then seeing it being put, like, his food or his drink, I can't remember how it is, the drink maybe, being placed in front of Joffrey, and that's
how it is. I want to say it's his food, like, I want to say it's a Mama Cass situation.
Well, no, but it's poison.
It's the poison that's in Sansa's hairnet.
Like, it looks like he chokes or something.
Yeah, it looks like he chokes, and then everyone blames Tyrion, so I would say that the part that I know was going to be in season four, my prediction, is the Tyrion Lannister trial by combat featuring Oberyn Martell, the Red Viper, versus Gregor Clegane, the Mountain, season 4. It's going to be such a showstopper. Oh.
That's going to be awesome, though. And also, that gives, I'm trying to remember, because there's something, and I don't know if this is just that I was spoiled for something, or if this has actually happened, so I don't want to spoil it for Nyssa.
No, Nyssa
don't
hasn't
worry
read it.
About it, dude.
Statue of Limitations is off. Anything that gets spoiled for either of you now, I don't feel sorry about, because you've had those books in your hands.
I've had some serious spoilers anyway.
Tywin Lannister's death.
Oh. That's at the very end of the third book, right?
Okay, that's what I thought.
Or is it the very beginning?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he,
I believe you.
Basically, Tyrion figures out, he finds out about Tysha.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
the truth about Tysha from Jaime, and Jaime lets him out of prison. So by this point, Jaime has had his hand chopped off, has made his way to King's Landing, has had dirty, filthy, gross sex with Cersei in Baelor's Keep.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, he says to him, well, actually, Dad arranged for the, like, you know, Dad lied to you. Like, she wasn't a whore. And so then he kills both Shay, his former lover.
Yeah, that's right.
And Tywin.
Well, who also testified against him.
Yeah.
Which is such an awful moment.
He made me call him my giant of Lannister, which is so sad. Like, it's such a sad point. And it's, you know, it begins the decline of gloomy Tyrion, which you guys haven't even encountered. So I'm not even going to say anything else about it. But yeah, I would say it's hard for me to make real predictions. Just because I know so much of what's going to happen in the next, like, three seasons of this show. But I'm interested to see how much they stick to, like, certain parts of the script, so.
Right.
Absolutely. It's going to be interesting seeing Sansa and Tyrion's wedding.
Doesn't Caitlyn happen in the third book, though?
Caitlyn happens.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
So she's at the very end of the third
book.
That's
what I thought,
because
I feel like that's,
scene.
Like, the last scene in the entire
is the
book
last
is when she, like, shows up again.
You guys,
there's so much that happens in the third book.
You know what I missed, though, in my first reading that I found out on a forum? Did you guys know that it's Nymeria? It's Arya's missing wolf that pulls Catelyn ashore.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I
didn't know that. Like, and she's part of this band
that.
Of wolves.
I feel like I remember
that everyone's
that.
Hearing about.
Like, there's a tree involved. And
yes.
Like...
Because isn't it also that Arya has started having dreams as well?
Yeah, Arya has really fucked up dreams after she starts her, like, after her list gets really long.
Yeah. Well, and but isn't she also have sort of like wolf dreams as well, like on top of Bran? Because it's
no,
I think she maybe has one.
Because the
like,
thing
it's
is,
not
she's...
like it's not like Bran levels.
Yeah, and she's
but, like, I feel like there's some of that happening.
She sees what happens because she's with
Beric
Dondarrion.
She's hanging out with that wizard dude.
Beric Dondarrion. She's hanging out with him, and so they arrive too late for her to be safely given to her friends and family, and that's part of what
that's
Mace Arya is. It's such a sad point, and that's why Joff's death is such a bone that they really are going to need to throw that beleaguered ass audience.
Yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
Arya's whole life is so messed up.
Oh, I love her. I love the actress who plays her, though. They've cast her well. She's great. I do kind of
it's
wish
just not
more. I wish they'd be able to do more with Harrenhal.
Oh,
Harrenhal's
so boss.
There's an animated short about it.
That's definitely one of those shows, or one of those points at which it's you lose some of the nuance and you lose some of the detail, because I think Arya's voice is so strong, like her internal voice is so strong.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why you love her so much. So really, I mean, you still see it, and she's still a badass, but it's just not quite the same because you don't get the level of hatred that she has on the inside.
I agree.
She's like going totally insane over time.
Well,
it's
I mean,
she's just
though.
Not stable. You still love her, and you know she's totally right. But like, going over the edge.
I think, so you guys, I don't want to spoil anything, but you know, she becomes one of the faceless men.
Yeah.
She's in training. She's in training, and I'll cut that out. We get to the point where she's in training, and she's actually gotten her first face. And we find out the way that they get the faces, that they're the faces of the dead who surrendered themselves at the house of the faceless men for preparation for burial. And hers is the face of this girl who was terribly abused, and she has to take in all of those experiences. Like, it's just, like, you realize all of these sort of, like, these bits of her, like, the experience
of faceless men. She's going to be so awesome.
Like. I think she is. I think that she is. She's the Valkyrie, right? Like, she's the, like, avenging angel. And I'm so excited for her to ride down. Like, and, like, wreak some, like, real havoc there. And I'm really excited, too, for the inevitable Jaime-Cersei confrontation that's brewing at this point. Because he's the Balancor.
I really hope he kills her.
I think he will, because I think that it's what that Maggie the Frog foretold in her...
Yeah. Speaking of the Frog, the Reek probably going to show up. It seems they've been cast. I've been reading kind of, like, casting news, so they've cast the Reek. So apparently they are going to show up, which is great, because that was another big thing that a lot of people, the internet went crazy about in terms of book fans.
Well, Jojen Reed is that kid from Love Actually, and it's just blowing my mind. Yeah!
Well, also, Mance
Rayder.
The bastard. Who am I thinking of?
Oh, Bastard of Bolton. What's his face?
Yes, Roose Bolton's bastard is played by Simon from Misfits.
Hate that kid. And I hate the Bastard of Bolton. That is perfect.
Oh, he's going to be good. He's good. So it'll be good.
Man.
He's the guy with the creepy eyebrows, the big caterpillar eyebrows and all the hair?
No, the blonde. The
little Nazi looking kid.
So he looks like a grown-up Joffrey, which I really like, actually, a lot. So there's that. That's exciting. Well, Nissa, you were talking about your your predictions.
Yeah, I want to hear your predictions.
Overall.
How do you think the sucker's going to end?
And this is something that, you know, I was friends with a lot of people who were way more into this than I was for a long time. So a lot of this is stolen directly from them. But I'm pretty sure that at the end of all things, it's going to be Jon Snow and Dany married on the throne together. Because there you got your ice and your fire. And, like, it's going to be pretty obvious that he's Lyanna and Robert's, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
Rhaegar.
Or Rhaegar's.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I know what you meant.
Not Robert, not Fatty. Oh, but that's super gross, and they still end up being brother and sister, like, as is tradition for Tyrion.
Well, I guess she'd be his aunt, right? Because Rhaegar wasn't her dad. The Mad King was her dad. So she is Rhaegar's sibling. So she's Jon Snow's aunt. Right.
That's better. Yeah, I was misremembering how that worked.
No, I mean, it's really, like, complicated. It's so gross. I love the Targaryen bloodlines. It's, like, my favorite thing to read about.
But, I mean, and, like... I think Arya's going to end up being... I don't know.
I think Arya's going to die. Like, I'm calling that. I think the thing is she's just lived through such crap. I'd love to see her live, but horror film rules, and her life is clearly a horror film.
That's not fair, because I feel like Sansa's not going to die.
No, she's not.
Because nothing ever happens to her, and, like,
she's
Arya
the
has
other
such a
option.
Terrible life, and it's
How
not
about
fair.
That? How about that? I think that Sansa's the other obvious candidate for the throne, like, with Littlefinger positioning her... Like, and she's ice. Someone else could be fire.
Die, and I want Arya to, like, lead the Kingsguard forever.
You know, because, like, there's the argument that, you guys know, like, that, what's his face? The Mad King raped, Tywin's wife is another aspect of it. So there's the argument that, one of those three kids is secret Targaryen. And some people
Tyrion
are like,
is the most popular
I think
that it's Cersei because she's so batshit crazy.
But that's they're twins. True.
Well,
that
but
would
then,
make her and Jaime both. Like,
no, not necessarily.
It they can have it different depends fathers. On whether or not they've been lied to. Like, it really depends on whether or not that's true.
But they were born at the same time. Like, they would know that.
No, but you, they they're not identical twins, they're fraternal twins. So there's the possibility, however slim, well, that they have different fathers.
Because they're opposite gendered. But yeah, the point is made over and over that they look exactly the same.
I know, but I just think that she might be the secret Targaryen. It's like it's like how she
thinks, never know, it's George R. R. Martin.
It's like she's so convinced, right?
I'm just that, biology.
She's so convinced that it's Tyrion who's the Valonqar who's gonna kill her, and that's part of the reason she hates him so much. But we know that it's totally Jaime. Like, you know, like, it's all about that stuff. Yeah. And George R. R. Martin loves to toy with us. I don't think any of them are probably secret Targaryens.
No, I think it's interesting.
That'd be better than is actually going to turn out, I'm sure.
I think it'd be interesting to have Sansa to kind of come back to her. This is what my hope is for Sansa, is that she actually is on the throne, or she's married to the person who's on the throne, and ultimately she's the person who kills whatever.
You know what? No, I hope that if she does end up on the throne, she ends up in a Jane Grey situation where she's on the throne, not because she wanted to be, but because somebody made her. And then 9 days later, somebody else comes in and says, no, this is my throne, bitch, and cuts off her head.
That's a lot of rage.
I hate Sansa a lot.
I don't hate her that much. I'm disappointed in her more frequently than not.
Well, that's in really the last book, you guys, just to like throw another fly in the ointment in the Song of Ice and Fire, like if ice and fire are people, mm-hmm. interpretation, John Coddington, the Hand of the King, has reemerged. Mm-hmm. And he says that he has Aegon, the little baby that was presumed murdered.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah.
So yeah. I think that they may be setting up Sansa marries that guy.
That's totally a Perkin Warbeck, though. Like, that's not. I think gonna so be too. A pretender to the throne.
I just, I'm, like, I, it's.
Didn't we? Don't we know that? Like,
there's the vision of the toy dragon, like, of the play dragon. So I think that's what it is, but I'm not sure. So I just.
I think that it's. It's probably a pretender to the throne, but the thing is, like, I think that's why it's going to be very interesting, because you're going to have this weird, and in my head, this is exactly reinforcing what I want it to be, which is that actually, him being a pretender to the throne, either he's a better ruler than anyone else, or
that has occasionally happened,
which could occasionally happen, and the tragedy of, I think, these books is that really the people who should be ruling very rarely do.
Littlefinger for president.
Oh, God.
He'd be better at it than anybody else. How about this? He's a guy who can balance his own books.
No, what was the name of that little boy pretender? Because Perkin Warbeck was an adult by the time he landed. There was a little, it was like Simon Lambert or something like that.
Yeah, the fake princes or whatever they're called.
There was a rebellion led in his honor, like, because he was supposed to be one of the missing princes. But Perkin Warbeck was also supposed to be one of the missing princes. And he convinced his mom, like his theoretical mom, to support him, which was awful.
Wow.
But I'm interested to see, too, because I think that, I think a lot of his prophecies have laid certain expectations out. Like, I expect it to be Dany coming towards the throne, and there's the dragon with the three heads. And who are those, like, three heads? And I think Tyrion is one, because he's been headed in her direction in recent books. Yeah. And I think that they have a lot in common. And I'm really looking forward, actually, to Tyrion-Dany interactions.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it could,
like,
also be as simple as she has three dragons.
I know, but I like the idea that it's the three heads of the dragon, just it's not the three dragons. It's they are people, so I'm interested to see who all of them are.
Well, that's entirely, like, that's way better than, you know, my theory. I'm just thinking, like, the heraldic device often involves just, like, instead of drawing three whole dragons, a lot of the time they just be like, "Oh, okay, there's three heads now, so like you can infer that there's extra dragons back there in the exact same position."
That's
so I don't have to draw anymore.
A really cool and interesting idea, and I like the idea of it too, because sometimes his stuff gets so complicated, like the Azor's Eye and the prince that was promised, like, and how many times we've had incidents of like tears and smoke and the flame of the comet, and like how many times we thought that like one or the other person was the prince that was promised. Clearly, I'm a Dany contender. I think she's totally the prince that was promised, but, like...
I think she is, too, honestly.
I think she is as well, and I think that... I mean, obviously, I think Jon Snow is there. It's interesting. I think that the three heads of the dragon are basically the three people who are... seem to be our protagonists at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be very interesting, because I'm just wondering... I mean, I can't imagine, and this is going to be the most damning statement, I can't imagine Jon Snow dying at this point. I'm jinxing it now. but it's kind of that idea of, like, you have to wonder, what would he do then if somebody like Jon Snow, because Jon Snow I think would actually be a really hard one for people to take in terms of the books.
Well, especially since he hasn't actually accomplished anything.
Like, well, also because, his story isn't over, but B, because he seems like he is the most archetypal of all the characters,
I think.
I really just want the Arya, John. I really want Arya and John to meet again, just because they were such a pair.
Oh my god, how is he going to react to what she has become, though?
Well, I mean, but he's also, like...
that's true.
They've just both been through hell, and it's, like... I feel like it kind of reminds me, actually, of Holocaust narratives, to a degree, right? Like, the poor Stark scattered to the winds, and all I want is for them to come back together and, like, eat a cake and, like, cry.
Yeah.
And, like, hug each other. Like, it's all I want. And I went for, like, Nymeria and Arya to, like, be back together. You know, like, I have all of these, like, plush puppy in my heart feelings.
Like, that they're separate, like, the way they get separated. And, like...
Yeah. It's really heart-wrenching, actually. You really want these direwolves to be reunited. I kept hoping that Lady was actually still alive.
Oh, no.
I kept holding out hope, and it was actually the show that, like, dashed those hopes for me.
Because I was actually mad that it was Lady that had to do it. I was, you know... Like, if you're going to kill somebody, just take Sansa out there.
Dude, Sansa before the dog. I love a dog.
Right? That dog didn't do anything wrong.
No, Sansa did everything wrong.
And always does.
And then Joffrey. Yeah. Actually, let's kill Joffrey. Don't worry.
Yeah, well, we're going to do that anyway.
It's happening.
It's in the works.
On that note, let's kill Joffrey. we should wrap it up, guys. So we're gonna end this kind of supersized episode of our Game of Thrones analysis with a happy winter is coming day, aka happy Easter coming up.
Easter and winter coming at the same time.
Exactly. That makes sense, right? So have a safe trip out of the Jungle of Death, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.